You're listening to Casino Talk with Brooke Dunn, brought to you by CEM Audio Edge. Loaded with robust information that always provides laughter and entertainment. Get all the latest hires and industry news right here with Casino Talk with Brooke Dunn. Now, let's start the show.
Well, welcome to the January 27th show of Casino Talk with Brooke Dunn. This is Brooke Dunn, broadcasting from high atop the VideoPoker.com building, overlooking a rainy day here in Las Vegas in the airport. We're brought to you by Casino Enterprise Management Magazine and CEM Audio Edge, VideoPoker.com, and of course, Nothing Bundt Cake, and every one of my in-studio guests gets to take home a Bundt Cake with them, and today's flavor is chocolate chips. So, again, no one comes to talk to me. They all come for the free cake, and they're here. If you have any questions, you can put it in on the chat room, or please call 718-766-4250, and Matt will put you right through. I did say that Marcus Prater would be joining us today, but I was wrong, so he will not be giving us an update. We'll be getting an update from AGM next week. So my guests this week are the CEO and Executive Vice President of Marketing. I have two people in the studio from GCA. So my first guest is the CEO, Ram Chari. See, you know, I just pronounced it 2 seconds ago and got it wrong. Welcome to the show, Ram. How are you?
Great. How are you, Brooke?
It's a pleasure. Perfect, and thanks for asking, and it's a pleasure to have you here. We want to talk about, because you're new to the gaming industry. I'm sure people know you. I have never met you before, which is very, very odd because I've been around a long time. So where did you come from?
I am new, but it's hard to believe today coincidentally happens to mark my one-year anniversary with GCA.
1 year already. Okay.
January 27th.
You came in, David Lopez left, and then you came in.
Correct.
And they recruited you from?
Well, I was unemployed at the time, technically.
Between jobs is what we say in the business.
Fair enough. I was with a company, a Fortune 500 company called FIS. In core banking and payments processing.
That's a Fidelity.
Correct.
Okay.
Fidelity National Information Services.
Okay. And they did what? Their financial services?
Yeah, core banking, payments processing.
Oh, okay. So that was your background because GCA is in the payment processing
Correct.
Business. Okay. And you'd spent how many years there?
Spent 7 years at FIS.
7 years. And what kind of school, where did you go to school? And
went to undergraduate at the University of Colorado.
Okay.
Studied economics there.
And you're not smoking pot now, so you're okay?
No.
From university. Okay, that's good.
Fair.
That's good.
Yeah. That's for another day, another time.
Well, and against gaming regulations,
absolutely.
So it would never happen.
Absolutely. Not
yeah.
with me.
And then you must have gotten a graduate degree?
Graduate degree at Purdue University.
Yeah. Wow, very good credentials. Fantastic. And you're from the United States or
born in Manassas, Virginia.
Manassas, Virginia. So
yeah.
You didn't get into gaming. You went into the global part that supplies gaming. So your interest was in financial backgrounds? Or?
Yeah, I've always had a passion for being in a business that was much more consumer-facing. So even
okay.
my payments experience was retail payments. Drawn to GCA because it's essentially a consumer-facing business, the patron in the casino being the consumer.
And you guys do billions of transactions a year.
Yes, billions of transactions.
And it's all you. I don't know how many casinos you're hooked up, but you're international. You're not just domestic.
We are. Most of our presence is here in North America, and we have a very, very market-leading share in North America.
Yes.
We're in a lot of casino operations, and we do have some international business.
And now you head up, obviously, you're the CEO, and you're a publicly traded company.
Correct.
And you guys came on board doing, we'll talk about the purchase or acquisition of another company soon. But how big were you when you first joined? What was your annual sales looking like?
Yeah, from a revenue perspective, around $600 million.
$600 million. And that's because of you lease the machines or do you get paid per transaction?
It's transaction-based revenue for the most part. It's recurring revenue. We get a piece of the ATM transaction. We get a piece of the cash advance transaction, whether it be debit point of sale or a credit card cash advance at the casino.
And then you have to do the central credit checks and all that. You eat the – if the guy doesn't pay, you eat it, right?
Well, we have a check warranty product
okay.
That allows us to warranty – the checks that are cash at the casinos.
Okay. So in addition to casinos, where else do you put your currency transaction machines?
We're gaming only. So
gaming
we're
only
in casinos.
Wow. And then you're licensed in every – or are you a vendor?
We're licensed in nearly 300 jurisdictions.
Fantastic. That's not a fun process.
No.
Not a fun process at all.
No, and the unique thing about our company, as I said, we're relatively small. Pre-acquisition of Multimedia Games, we were $600 million in revenue. But we have a licensing footprint that is, you know, rivals anybody in the space.
And how many employees before you have the
just purchase? Under 500.
Just under 500. And most of those service, or is that back at headquarters?
A combination. I mean, most of those employees are in Nevada at our headquarters here in Las Vegas.
Now, does GCA have to put the money in, or are banks putting the money into the machines?
We have Vault Cash partners that we use. And it depends on the type of machine that sits on the casino floor, so it's a combination.
Because you just drove a smart car, and if that had money in it, I could take it out. You're not driving an armored car here to the studio, so you...
No, that's right. That's right.
So you there's risk. You guys have cash management risk.
Risk there, yeah.
So you have to have insurance. You guys are into a whole different basis than what gaming's used to. You know, we don't talk about cash handling. We
correct.
Do it inside the building. You've got to do it from building to building to building.
That's right.
And you got to keep everybody separate, because if you mix that money, I'm sure the casinos get a little angry.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, how about counterfeiting? I'm just getting off on a set. How about counterfeiting? Do you guys have to have a whole division for that?
No, we don't. We don't run into that issue given the business that we're in, what we play in. I mean, the important thing is that we enable cash transactions. Cash has always been a part of gaming. Cash will always be a part of gaming from my perspective. Okay. So that's what we do.
Yeah, well, we've all tried to get to the debit cards, but I get worried about that too, because somebody could clean out their bank account before they know it. And
that's why I don't think that'll ever happen. There'll always be a separation of the slot machine, for example, from the debit card.
I tend to agree with you, but the word forever is, that's unfortunately a long word. I don't know if it'll ever, you know, because I saw the future. Remember Battlestar Galactica? They dealt in qubits, if you remember those, when
that's
they
right.
gambled. So, you know, we'll always get there. We just don't know what it is. So now you're here for GCA. You're here for a year. One full year. But in that year, you said, I'm going to buy a slot company. Now, tell me how that came about.
I don't think that conclusion came about that quickly.
That quickly.
Or that simply.
It didn't hit you in the middle of the night that I'm just going to buy a slot company.
I think when I came to GCA, the thing that struck me are two key strengths. And I mentioned the compliance strength and that we're licensed in lots and lots of jurisdictions, given how small our company is. The other is the deep relationships we have. I mean, in our team, we have decades-long relationships in certain cases with casino operators, and it's something that's very unique in the space. And in a business that's clearly a relationship-driven business, it was a strength that we wanted to leverage. And as I mentioned, a lot of people might not know we're gaming only to begin with.
Yeah, I did not know that. I thought you guys were – you did it. I thought you were in malls, to be real honest with you. I thought you put your cash machines everywhere.
No, so okay. A slot manufacturer, you know, by that definition, was a natural extension for us.
But were you a manufacturer license? You weren't – you have to acquire their license.
Well, in the last few years, we have produced a kiosk. A multifunction kiosk, an integrated kiosk that's been on the casino floor.
Absolutely.
So that's gotten us into the same space as a slot would be. Both have to be integrated into the slot system, for example.
Yeah.
So it's gotten us closer to that space. Depending on the jurisdiction, in some cases we already have the license, and in some cases we'll get the license quickly. But even when they're different, we're well on our way to getting those licenses.
Okay. Now, do your salespeople in the old days, GCA only, were you dealing with the financial side of the operator or with the slot side?
Cash access traditionally has been just with the financial side of the operator. The kiosk, as I mentioned in recent years, has had us deal with the slot decision maker. So
because
that's a unique thing.
Because you got to get into the Tito system and because you got to find out if the tickets are worth anything, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
Okay, so you have two contacts then. You've got the CFO side or the cage side, and then you have the slot side.
That's right.
So how big is your sales force?
I don't know the exact number, but we're probably with sales and relationship about 50.
I'll notify the board. He's not aware of his employees. We'll get that to the board
about
of directors.
50.
There you go. So and they're just going to naturally take on more products then. So see you increasing the sales?
Well, in this combination, a lot of the combinations in the space, it's important to note that this combination is very, very unique in that we're complementary businesses, not businesses that have redundancies that are coming together. We're not looking to take out anybody in sales and relationships. So that's the magic, I think, one of the pieces of the combination that will be very special is that we're going to keep everybody.
Wow. So all the MGAM people that came over are going to incorporate, but you're not going to – like there's some places, let's be honest, you go to Jackpot, Minnesota or Jackpot, Nevada, it's a long trip for two people to make. So you're not going to combine some of these sales?
Well, in field service, there are some synergies to be had for sure, but generally in the relationship – part of the business, we're going to keep most folks.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, then, obviously, the executives, there was a little trimming there because you don't need two CFOs.
That's right.
You certainly don't need two executive senior vice presidents of marketing.
We've
right?
got one good one. That's all that matters.
Did you bring him along, or who's this guy? But we'll talk about that in a minute. But so you had some cutback due to that because of those are redundant, billing, account payable, all that.
Yeah.
So that was a simple thing. I know it's always –
I wouldn't describe it as simple as much as straightforward.
Straightforward, okay. Yeah, it's hard to deal with people's lives. You know, sure. they're functioning well, and suddenly their world turns upside down. But it's a necessary evil. But so now, how many employees do you have?
Post combination, we're about 1,000.
1,000, all headquartered here in Las Vegas, except for the field office.
Well, the payments business, which is Legacy GCA, that still continues to be headquartered in Las Vegas. Our corporate headquarters is now Las Vegas. Our games division headquarters is going to be in Austin, Texas, which is where multimedia was.
Okay, that's games is the R&D part of it, the development of the game?
Well, we're going to run two divisions, so payments being the cash access business we were talking about before.
Sure.
The slot manufacturing business will be our games division.
So you had an R&D department anyway for the cash handling?
Correct.
Now, is there any ability for those people to cross over?
Some going forward, and that's more of a future state that might take months or even years to materialize, but you know, day one, they're pretty separate.
And you enjoyed or liked the products that MGAM was having? I know they got, I'm going to call it, at least lightning bug in a jar or lightning in a jar when they did the tournament games,
mm-hmm.
which I think is carrying MGAM right now. I mean, it's a big product, and people are very happy with it.
Well, their Austin, Texas roots, I think, are unique. It's a software development hub in the U.S., probably second only to Silicon Valley. It produces a unique game experience, unique content. We were very much drawn to that differentiation.
Now, these people are mostly from software. They're not from the gaming side?
That's correct, yeah.
So who's directing them into the game? Because gaming comes down to math. Let's be real specific. The game, it's a math model. So someone has to have some gaming experiences.
Yeah, our studio content teams, and we have 8 teams that we're planning to ramp to 10 in 2015. I mean, they are somewhat traditional in that they have 2 mathematicians, they'll have a creative content person, they'll have a software development person. So that content studio is pretty consistent with what you see in gaming. I think the difference is the individuals that make up those teams are different. They come from different industries, they come from different backgrounds, and I think that brings the unique flavor to what was Multimedia Games and now our company.
And somebody emailed me earlier with a question saying, all right, I want to become a game guy for you. Do you go through the Las Vegas office? Do you go to Austin? Do you apply online? What impresses you about a up-and-coming game person who wants to learn? Because obviously they're rookies or they wouldn't be, you know, emailing me.
I think in any business, and this is my professional experience, having passion for the business is really the most important characteristic you'll find in any employee. So if they have a passion for the gaming space, a passion for game development and design, they're probably going to be successful. So to answer the question specifically, you can reach out to the headquarters in Austin of our games division, our corporate headquarters in Las Vegas, or online. Any of those things work.
Okay. And now what is your goal with the combined company with MGAM? Are we looking at becoming a major? Because they were a bit player, for lack of a better term. They weren't one of the top 5 guys. What are your goals?
Well, we intend to be the most strategic partner for our casino clients that they have, you know, across any of their business. So we're already very, very key relative to cash access. We have a major presence in the industry in terms of the payment side of our business. We want to extend that to the game side of our business to be the most strategic partner that they look to in terms of how to be competitive, especially in what has been in the U.S. a flat to somewhat declining market overall.
Oh, the slot supply.
Yeah,
absolutely shrinking at this point.
They're looking for more and better ways to be competitive and drive their business, and we want to be the most strategic partner in that endeavor.
Can you bundle price the products together as well, or are you selling 2 different people so you kind of keep them separate?
It's a little bit of both in that from a GCA payments perspective over the last year, we've worked very, very hard to sell the differentiated strengths of our capabilities, and we've done that through solution sales.
Okay.
So there's some of that we'll carry over to games over time.
Yeah. Now, let's get back to GCA for a second. The what you call it?
Payments.
The payment side. What makes your machines, the kiosks, better than your competitor?
Well, the kiosk is really the only differentiated integrated kiosk of its type in the industry. It's generally dual screen, multifunction. You can do bill break at the kiosk. You can do ticket in at the kiosk. There are a number of transactions you can initiate and complete at the kiosk. So it's a different type of device that sits on the casino floor. No one else has one like it. Relative to cash access in general.
No, you're talking about you can do ATM, your debit card, but you can also put a credit card in your machine.
Well, you can initiate a credit card, cash advance, or
but you still have to go to the cage to get the final signature and all that.
You do, but you can initiate that at our kiosk.
So you start the process over here and then walk over to the cage and finalize it and get your – do they give them a check? Whatever they do, but you get your cash.
Right.
And that's a different business than just the ATM, because in the ATM you're dealing with a lot of banks, whichever one happens to have the account at that casino.
Correct. That's right.
All right. So then that makes you, you know, you have to do that relationship, or when you go in and you say, hey, I'm with Bank of America, or I'm with Wells Fargo, or whatever.
Well, it's a patron's relationship with their financial
institution. So you adapt to whatever bank they have, be it a credit union, or any of them self-funded? I mean, I would think some of the tribes might even have their own credit unions, but...
Well, it varies depending on what the casino patron is in terms of what our relationship is with our customer. You know, our direct customer is the Native American tribe or the casino operator on the commercial side.
Okay.
Their customer is the patron, so
sure.
It's a unique relationship, really, because we're part of both.
Right, and they don't care what bank they use. They interlock through the star system or whatever. So now, I've happened to be in a casino when, like, the system goes down. Now, is that a 24-hour call that you get, like, because they can't make any money if the machines go down? Is that a system problem, or is that a GCA thing, or what happens?
I think depending on the instance, it can vary. It can be a problem at the property. Sometimes it's a problem that has nothing to do with GCA, frankly.
Yeah.
But we'll stand behind any of our products and services, and we'll go respond whether it's our direct problem or
not. So you have 24/7, 24, you're out there. Cause
we do.
If those go down, there's a lot less cash in the casino.
Yeah, cash to the floor.
And they desire that, because that gets more and more slot players. There's no two ways about it. So now let's talk about you and gaming. Are you a gaming guy? Do you have a passion for it yourself?
As I said, I have a passion for, you know, end consumer behavior. I enjoy, you know, walking to a casino and actually doing some of my job to see what patron behavior is like, especially now on the slot side, to see what's of interest to patrons, where they get play. So I definitely have a passion for the business.
Okay, and are you a gamer yourself? Do you partake in your own products?
Not particularly, but...
Oh, that's bad to hear.
I'm a big sports guy. So
oh, are you?
Okay. Once upon a time, sports was interesting to me.
Well, Purdue, yeah, they're competitive. There's no two ways about it. I did get a question that came in earlier on the email, and I've got to find it. There it is. This person wanted to know, what are your thoughts, and how are you going to take advantage of online, mobile gaming, or, you know, social, and for real money now that you have MGAM?
Well, I'm of the mind that real money online wagering is something that's not going to really take hold in the U.S. in the next several years.
Wow, okay.
Might be a contrarian point of view, but the stop and start that's happened in New Jersey, I think, is evidence of the fact that I think from a regulatory perspective and a broader acceptance, it's not going to happen. So that's not the real money online is not something we're focused on. From a social perspective, we're definitely focused on our library of titles from a multimedia perspective and how to potentially leverage that in the social space.
Are you going to do it yourself, or you guys are licensing your product to other providers?
We have some alliances already, and okay. So we're exploring both avenues.
And then what, you just get a license fee based on the playability of the game? Is that how I – because it's new to me when you license it. Or is that more – we'll talk to him about that. Okay, we'll save that for you. So, but you are exploring that area. But you're what about systems you're not in, right? MGAM does not have a system, or GCA does not have a system. So you're not competing with Konami and those guys on that.
We don't have a system, but we run the New York lottery system, so that's the exception.
Oh, that's right. You're in the lottery business
right.
as well. So you're competing with Scientific Games.
We're just New York.
Just New York. You only
yeah,
do the
just
one.
New York.
Is that VLTs and?
Yeah, VLT.
Okay. Now, do you print? You don't print scratch off or anything else. It's just
no.
the one part of it.
Right.
And that was the legacy of where MGAM came from.
Correct.
That's what I forgot. Yes. Yeah, so MGAM started the lottery business and then went into the games. And they have really just been producing. I mean, they don't have a ton of units out there to date. It's kind of a new business for them. What do you? How many units do you have in the United States?
Total in terms of slot machines?
Yeah.
We're roughly 14,000.
14,000. And are they sold or both? Recurring revenue, or the
we have more recurring revenue in that population than anyone in the industry.
Oh,
we're proud of that.
Well, fantastic. And then these tournament games. Well, let's talk about the tournament. We want to wait for Rob for that. Okay, because that seems to be the thing that's turning their heads. It was a segment that no one was supplying. It was just old steppers until then.
And it's a unique product capability. I mean, the folks you referred to who have systems products, they have a tournament-like capability on their floor, but they have to turn their whole floor. And not just a bank. The fact that we can just light up a bank is a very unique part
and you can turn it on and turn it off. We'll talk about that with you in a few minutes. Well, let's get back to your personal life then. Are you involved with any charitable organizations, or what turns you on and keeps you active other than GCA?
My family and I moved from Florida, so historically when I was based there for several years, I was very active.
In High Life?
No. I was on the board of Leukemia Lymphoma Society in
Northeast
Florida for 4 years, and we're transitioning still to Las Vegas, so at some point I'll pick up something here.
Oh, okay, because we just did that Light the Night.
Light the Night.
Yeah, were you part of that? That was a good organization. Unfortunately, my brother is suffering from leukemia, so it's dear to my heart. Oh, thank you. It's a battle. It's a battle. So I'm glad to see somebody putting up money to that thing. How about other passions, hobbies? What else do you, you...
I like to golf, but I have a 4-year-old at home, so it takes a lot of time away from her, especially on the weekends.
Oh, you just have the one child?
Yes.
And how long have you been married?
About 9 years.
9 years. Fantastic. And now is she in the gaming business, or she's just working, taking care of the kid?
And keeps track of me, which is a pretty hard job.
So are you getting more involved in the community? Because, again, you're new to this this side, and it's not a huge – it's a huge industry, let's be honest, but it's kind of small in relationships. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
And you've got to go to these events and start. So are you getting involved with like AGM or AGA or any of that?
Yeah, and I think my team is, and I've made the rounds as you would expect in Las Vegas. I think it's been good to have a partner like Patrick Ramsey, who is the former multimedia CEO.
Yes.
He's a guy who's well known and well respected in the industry, so he's been a good partner in terms of getting me introduced and plugged into the scene in
sure.
Las Vegas in particular.
Okay, and now you guys will or will not be at ICE next week.
We will be.
Oh, you're going to be at ICE.
I won't be personally, but our company.
Okay, your company. So you are looking to go more international.
We're going to be very selective. I mean, the UK is a great example. So, you know, we made a concerted effort to go into that market.
Well, they got that weird money you have to deal with.
And we've got a big presence in the UK. So if the market makes sense from an overall perspective, we'll make the investment. We'll get in there.
Do you go to the Australian shows and those, or are you pretty much just do the World Gaming, G2E here?
We have been in Australia, and we have been in Macau in the past.
And now do you have offices there as well?
We have an office in Macau.
Wow. Okay, so now GCA has a presence then in Macau.
A presence, yes. Small, albeit small, we have a presence.
But that's a big cash business out there, so there's got to be a lot of cash handling.
It's a different model. I mean, they have their pawn operations. Lots of times patrons show up with suitcases full of cash.
It's amazing,
isn't it?
The
cash access demand is a different demand.
Yeah, they're bringing cash to the casinos, in like you said, in suitcases.
Right.
Maybe not anymore now that they're cracking down on some people, but it is in a very interesting marketplace. I know it's slowing down greatly, but it's been a real experiment, and people forget. And they're still begging for more tables. They're forgetting how big Macau is. Macau is as big as the Strip, no two ways about it.
It's bigger, I think.
Well,
bigger.
Yes, in volume, absolutely. Yeah. It's just it's unbelievable. I've been there a few times, and you just can't count the number of people that are playing on table games. So it's obviously an expansion, but it is a different criteria than here. And here we're doing so much slot business, which you get involved with. Now, are you finding one of the better operators, at least that I see, is Barona Casino, who now does free ATM withdrawals. I don't know if that's one of your clients. But are you seeing people... more and more transactions every year. Do you think people are bringing less cash and getting it at the casinos than in the old days?
We don't see that much difference in terms of volumes over the last few years. It pretty much goes with what you see in the gross gaming volume metrics.
How about the amount per transaction? Is that going up or down?
Amount per transaction has gone up, and the number of transactions has gone down. So patrons definitely prefer to have that fee hit them.
One time.
Less, yes.
One time. So right. So that's that. You think that's what's driving it. So instead of paying $2.99, $3 or whatever for a $20 bill, I'm paying $3 for a $400.
But it's important to note our casino client is the one that determines how much that fee is. That's
absolutely.
Their call. Yeah.
That's their call. And then they have to divide it amongst the patrons. So if they say zero fee, they still have to pay you. Even though they don't get one but they can decide what that fee is, and the bank can charge a fee on top of that, correct?
Yeah.
So if they so choose, so it's a tough. But you're not in that negotiation at all.
No.
You just come in and say we're going to get, you know, I'll just say a nickel. I don't know what it is, but you get a nickel, and everybody else has to fight over everything else, and you supply the equipment.
In most cases, we do.
And you sometimes they buy it, I'm sure, and then you supply the cash. Right.
Yeah, again, we have different arrangements, but we make sure the cash is in the machine.
Absolutely, because that's the key, because if that goes away. Now, how those things can hold how much cash nowadays? Because those things, ATMs used to be small. You're the size of a slot machine.
A lot, yeah, and that integrated kiosk has got a lot more capability and a lot more capacity.
Now, who decides the denominations that they offer? Do you or does the client say, hey, I only want to get on hundreds? Or like sometimes you get $100, you get a $100 bill. Other places you get 520s. Who's making these decisions?
The models vary. I mean, again, you know, of the 1,100 or so casinos in North America, we're in nearly 900 in some way, shape, or form.
Wow.
So it's hard to answer some of these questions because it varies depending on our client and their preferences.
Okay. So, but those are basically client decisions. You supply the machines, and they display how it goes. Well, that's fantastic. Are you enjoying the gaming side now that you're in the slots?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah? And now do you yourself interface with the game designers? Are you going to?
I'm beginning to. Yeah, we closed this transaction in late December, so I'm definitely beginning to interact and get involved.
Yeah, it's an interesting side. The gameplay is something else. And these guys that develop games, they're nuts, you know. But they're creative, and it's a tough road to come up with something different yet playable. So I applaud you, and I welcome you to the business, and it's a pleasure meeting you. And we're going to see now that your partner that you brought on, and we'll talk about some of the products, and then we if we come up with something, we'll get back to you, too. Is
absolutely.
That all right?
We'll ship it over to the expert.
Okay, well, is he an expert? Okay.
Yes, I wouldn't go that
far. Rob, welcome to the show. This is Rob Bone.
Hi, Brooke. How are you?
I am fine. You might want to sneak a little closer to that microphone.
All right.
And by the way, you got the one cake for the two of you, so I'm guessing it goes the other way, but we'll go with that route.
His daughter may get a bigger portion of the one cake than me and my wife.
So that's fantastic. Now, you just came from WMS.
I did. I spent 14 years there, almost about 14 years, and at the end of 2013, I made the decision to leave the company and evaluate some other opportunities. Served in a marketing capacity, served in a sales capacity. Kind of came up through the gaming industry through WMS. So
yeah.
It was a great experience. We had a great run, obviously culminated with the transaction with Cygames. But, a lot of good experience that I'm hoping to build off of as I join Ron's team and GCA in general.
Now, you were a UNLV graduate.
I was,
so
undergrad and grad.
And are you a homegrown Las Vegan?
No, I born in Dallas, but grew up for the most part in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And how did you get to Las Vegas?
I came here to play football. So
oh, you played football for UNLV?
I did.
And 0-10, 0-8?
They were the years that had the asterisk by them, like, turn the page. But, but they were fun nonetheless, and I got to tell you. I mean,
did you play for Robinson?
I played for Jeff Horton.
Jeff Horton, okay.
Robinson's first year was my first year out. But,
okay.
You know, even the lack of success we had, the city always embraced the school, and it was a great opportunity to get involved with casinos.
Yeah. Not the hardest ticket in town to get.
No.
Yeah. I played for the Aztecs, but that was way, 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 way back. You know?
Okay.
I'm a lot older than you are. So then when you came out to play football, you got recruited.
I did,
okay.
And played for almost, full 4 years, and then was a GA for 1 year.
Wow, so you were one of the few guys that graduated from school, like, you know, you went to class.
Absolutely,
so, congratulations.
Yeah. You know what? jokes aside, I actually have a lot of regard for my education and for education in general. So.
And you chose marketing, or what was your degree in?
Undergrad, well, my concentration MBA was marketing, my undergrad was in finance.
Wow, and you stayed, so he's pointing like you've got the job, you don't need to go. Impressive.
Right.
So, and then how did you find Williams, or how did they find you?
Interesting story. So I started working on the Strip in like a financial analyst capacity.
For who?
With Harrah's.
Okay.
And then was in a marketing capacity at MGM. So whether it was an internship or financial analyst capacity, what was interesting about Harrah's at the time is they didn't have dedicated departmental analysts. So you really got to learn the whole business.
Sure.
Based on the need.
Yeah.
So then an opportunity came about to backfill one of my good buddies in the business. He was at WMS. He was going to establish the distributor relationship with Australia. And so I told, you know, my family and my friends, sales, are you kidding me? Selling slot machines? What does that mean? But then 14 years later, it kind of took a direction of its own, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Wow, fantastic. Now, but you did it here, you weren't in Chicago.
I was both. So
both.
I started here, frontline sales, moved back to Chicago to establish a national account team, took over VP of the company in 2005, and then took over sales and marketing.
Now, did you report to Oren?
I reported to everyone from Oren to Larry to Ken Losciato was the COO when the time was ended. But, a couple different people.
And we never ran into each other, which was good.
We always knew of each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had heard your name. There's no two ways about that. So let's talk about some of your products. Because now you went to GCA. You've been there how long?
A little over 2 months.
Just 2 months.
So I'm an expert now.
You got a CEO with a year behind him, so you're right behind him. That's not a problem. So he picks you up, and you now, obviously, you came in after the merger.
Or
at the time.
After the merger. And,
okay.
And basically, you know, one thing Rom said to me very quickly is you don't have to be an expert in payments. You don't have to understand all the nitty-gritty and the complexities of the payments business.
You don't even have to cash your paycheck, I'm sure. You know, in fact, frame them. That really helps the company if you just frame them. But so you were coming on to help with the slot side.
Well, in general, it's a corporate function. So marketing, product management, and investor relations is my purview, and that extends to both P&Ls, payments and games. But I think and I'm hopeful Ron would agree, I think a lot of my experience on the game side is where I intend to leverage my capabilities.
Okay, so let's talk about some of your products, because let's start with the tournament. And I looked it up, and I think it's called Tournament 4.0, so I'm guessing there were three before it, or you guys just started in a weird numbering system. What is the advantage, and how did this come about? I know you weren't at MGame when it was developed, so...
Well, I remember the executive group that brought it out to G2E the first year, and it just made sense from day one in terms of the communal element of it, the status and leaderboard capabilities of it, and the business has just kind of added some features and functionality to it from a slot perspective. What is often talked about, which is equally as compelling, is the marketing campaign and the promotions behind it. So the National Tournament of Champions this past year culminated here in Las Vegas during G2E. This year...
And they gave away $1 million?
This year will be the first year we give away $1 million.
Okay.
But effectively, I mean, last year I think there was roughly 150 casinos that participated, or 150 entrants.
Yeah.
This year someone's going to come to Vegas during G2E and leave a millionaire.
How do you determine where you're going to hold that?
So our customers can opt in or basically buy an entry into the National Tournament of Champions. We work with them to facilitate... call it the entry process and who ultimately is sent from each respective casinos. They wear their own jerseys, and there's a lot of pride. And
sure.
It's really interesting. You got to see it firsthand.
Well, we did this with Let It Ride in the table games.
That's right.
It's a very similar type of process. But it's a fight to go which casino hosts it, because you're bringing in 150 slot players?
That's the goal, is to have 150 casino participants, which could be anywhere from one entry per casino to two or more.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's a great culmination event where people take a lot of pride in the casino they're representing.
Sure.
It's going to have a lot of media attention this year. And again, I mean, when's the last time you participated in a slot tournament and can walk away with $1 million?
Right.
I think there are some other slot tournaments in the business, but not one where, you know, it culminates like this.
I try to get four of a kind and win 125 coins. I don't, you know, a million is way out there. But if I were to win $1 million, it would make me even. I would be right now. That's what I need.
You and many others.
Yeah, just to get right back to even. At least that's what I would tell the IRS. So now these machines that you put on, you can switch them to regular play. Like, I mean, just it's a flip of a button, right?
Yeah, they're called in revenue and out of revenue. And so effectively the customers have used them in both formats. Most of the Tournament of Champions qualification process is done out of revenue.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a lot of opportunities when you're taking games out of revenue and looking at how we want to market to millennials or different types of demographics going forward. There's a lot of opportunity to mine in that turn event out of revenue field.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's all about win per unit. And I think the multimedia product portfolio, if you will, is just continuing to evolve and continuing to get more and more notoriety.
And so you don't care how they got in, whether they were comped in to play in the tournament. They just have to qualify by winning a tournament at a specific casino or casinos.
More or less. Okay. I mean, we definitely want our strategic casino partners to partner with us on the promotion and have that be executed in somewhat of a consistent format, so that the culmination event, you know, you almost have an expectation of how that's going to unfold. But,
okay.
People do have a little optionality in terms of how they want to do it at their property, and at the end of the day, you know, a small casino in, you know, a relatively, you know, low demand jurisdiction.
Lake Charles can send somebody in.
Can send someone to Vegas to win $1 million.
And then who's picking up that person to get here? Their airfare?
We pay the T&E.
That all comes out of you. So
that
comes out of whatever you've been collecting.
It's a turnkey promotion.
Wow.
Linda Tran, who runs the marketing and promotions for the multimedia side of the business, has done a great job. Her team executes the promotions, basically works with the casinos on a daily basis. Plans the bus that goes around and promotes the Tournament of Champions in general. So there's a campaign behind it. It's not just a product.
Sure, sure. And then people look forward to it coming to them, and it's not all year long. Right? There's specified entry dates.
Basically, roughly late spring through G2E. And a lot of, you know, points and milestones in between there. But we see this ultimately being, you know, the World Series of Poker in a slot format. And I'd love nothing more, and I'm sure the gentleman to my left would love nothing more than to literally have all these games at the Thomas and Mack and have, you know, something of a magnitude that is can't be replicated.
A tournament with 10,000 players. Wouldn't that be incredible?
It's attainable, though, Brooke.
It is. We grew our table game up to 300 people, and they all show up, and they all had $9,000 in their pocket day one. So I know it's a lot of work. But now, these tournament games don't have to just be part of the Tournament of Champions. people can just run their own tournaments with your machines.
Correct.
So it's just flip it on, and then it's right back into process.
That's right.
Okay, so that's one of your sale machines or recurring revenue machines. What other products are, I know you have Thundering Herd, which I've played. It's a good game.
Yep.
You have other game titles that are going. What's hot for your company?
Yeah, Thundering Herd is on our new platform, MPX. So I think a tried-and-true trend that's always prevalent in the gaming industry is platform innovation in concert with content innovation. So we came out with our Player HD cabinet, which is what largely a lot of the turn event products are on. We have additional stepper cabinets that have come out. So we branched into different markets. The MPX platform with Thundering Herd has been the first iteration that's starting to perform at a much higher index level.
Okay.
So I would say that's our best representation of a product that I would put up against our competitive set. In the Class 3 space.
Well, your competitive set's everybody. I mean, you can't just say we compete with IGT or Scientific Games.
Well, and ship shares have changed dramatically over
Absolutely.
The last couple of years.
Well, there used to be 23 companies. I'm sure it's a little bit less that are all going for the same space.
Mm-hmm.
So you're competing with them. You can't just compete with Bally. I mean, you've got to compete with them all.
Like I said, at the end of the day, it's about ROI and win per unit, and we're not held to any lower threshold than they are. So.
Absolutely. In fact, sometimes it's a higher threshold.
That's exactly right.
Because you've got a smaller piece of the floor, and you've got to make that really stand out to keep your machines out there. What do you got in the works? Anything?
Yeah, I would outline that, you know, while we're only about a 2-3% market share provider in Class 3 in the markets where we're currently licensed.
Do you do Class 2 as well?
We do Class 2, and our roots are in Class 2. So in jurisdictions like Oklahoma and Washington, we'll represent 13% of an average floor.
Okay.
So there are some extremely mature operations in each of those respective states. We have some deep relationships in Oklahoma, which is where I would say a lot of the early innings of multimedia began.
That's the only place you'll find VGT.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we know what happened with them.
Yes, they just got bought by Aristocrat. But VGT Games there, I still think there's a grandfather clause or something, but they have like 20% of the market there. It's
largely
incredible.
On maybe one math model or two or three math models.
I think it's three math models with different colors.
Yeah.
They really do. But they have that great bell, the Pavlov dog bell. They've got some magic. And if you haven't seen people play that game, get yourself to Oklahoma.
No doubt.
It's amazing what they've done. I don't know if they'll get outside of Oklahoma, and I know we're a little off topic of yours, but it is an amazing process. Oklahoma is not a unique market, but it is different in that it's all from Texas, let's be honest. But,
right.
You know, you go to Windstar, 8,000 machines, and they're full.
No doubt.
They're full, and it's crazy, and it's all in prefab buildings. It is bizarre.
It's a matter of first impression market that is now getting a more mature player to come along with it, both in Class 3 and Class 2, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You mentioned Moneybags and VGT.
Yeah.
Multimedia was beneficial in launching Meltdown in Washington.
Oh, really?
So when I say matter of first impression, the way in which players learn the gaming experience largely translates to loyalty.
Yeah.
So I think that allows for us to use some trademarks and some product extensions that will help us branch into new markets.
Okay. Now, your previous employer, WMS, mm-hmm. Scientific Games, whatever you want to call them today, they were pretty good with licensed product. Monopoly, Wizard of Oz, let's be honest, these are two home runs. Are
really,
you guys looking the same way? Or
I think that, you know, we have a different business model. You know, I think, you know, clearly if you want to have a big brand, big license, big box deal, typically, it comes at a higher price in terms of R&D and support and what have you. So
and license fees.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a core capability of something that we have today, nor something that we're deliberately going to try and attack. Again, I think you have to measure the landscape and look at what comes about and potentially make decisions on whether that becomes a part of our development focus going forward. But as of right now, we're using really common domain types of trademarks. Moby Dick, Invasion, Dracula.
But Moby Dick is not licensed.
It's common domain.
Yeah,
so,
it's
you know,
public,
yeah, exactly.
Okay. But even though people think, oh my God, you have to pay somebody for it. You don't. The Great White Whale is available.
That's
right. And people forget that. There are
And
some,
you can
yeah.
play it on a multimedia box at your local casino.
Well, that was pretty good. That wasn't bad. And then you won some awards for some of this, your products that came out, right? You got honored for best top 10 for the tournament. Anything else?
Thundering Herd was recognized. Which has, you know, a really compelling graphical experience and some emotive lighting on the side of it. I think it's really good hardware innovation coupled with good content innovation. Clint Owen and the guys who run the development teams in Austin are very capable people who may not have come from a gaming background per se, but they've evolved in the gaming space really well. So, you know, celebrations, math, merchandising, game mechanics, it's all you know, it's
ergonomics
all,
has a lot to do with it.
It's all known and executed on.
Okay. Now, again, let's get back to you. You guys are growing. You're not stagnant. So, how does someone appeal to you besides play football for like Reno to get your interest? How would someone come to you and say, "Hey, I want to be the next Rob"?
Wow, that's a tough question.
You got to play bad for a bad football team. So.
I wouldn't recommend that.
By the way,
that.
You know Danny Wade played for you.
Absolutely.
Danny Wade and I played in high school together, if you can believe that. And
I mean, a lot of names.
Yeah.
Steve Stallworth.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are
in
the business.
And Icky Woods is huge with Geico right now.
That's right. So, he'll celebrate anything.
He'll celebrate anything.
But you know,
a first down for you guys was big. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, very similar to what Rom said. I think people who show a passion for the game, a passion for the industry, a passion to understand the key psychologies of the gaming experience or the user experience on the payment side, there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, it's a very experienced industry. It's very incestuous, as you mentioned earlier.
It is.
But I think that there is a talent base that could be, you know, cultivated of these younger people who have graphic arts degrees or who have, you know, very, you know, PhD math capabilities. There's a ton of opportunity in this space, and I think a lot of manufacturers have benefited from that over the last few years.
Now, are you getting involved in game design as well from the marketing standpoint?
From a product management standpoint, I'll work with the people on the games and payment side to help architect our product roadmap, to infuse some process, and to look at where voids are, where we need to prioritize things from an R&D standpoint. I'm not the guy who's going to say this needs to be purple or orange or this needs to be called X or Y. Those guys are well endowed to, you know, do the things that they've done.
I would think everything would be silver and red, but that's just I don't understand.
The references, the shameless references continue.
Sorry, you know, it's just fun because everything for me was black and red. So,
no, Brooke, I'll honestly say I think that the creative prowess of both sides of the company is there, but we need to add some process to it, and we need to be in a situation where we can navigate really quickly in terms of redirecting R&D to X initiative or Y initiative. Things are happening so fast now that you can't just make a decision and then let things play out.
Yeah. Now, you've got some new games coming out. What's your new game? Obviously, Thundering Herd's been out for a year, though, right? It's not
The
new.
The MPX platform is our newest.
That's your newest. But
yeah.
So do you have any interesting titles coming
out? Well, Moby Dick is imminent here in Nevada.
Okay. It's on trial, you mean, or is it just...
It's in the lab.
It's in the lab,
yeah.
Okay.
Invasion is one we've had a lot of success with. Dracula, again, as I mentioned, is coming out. So there's a product portfolio that's very early in its distribution on the MPX platform.
You're not worried about a bloodsucker game with Dracula?
If it makes money, you know what? I don't think our customers care either.
Yeah, I know. There's been monster games that have been out. In fact, WMS, I had the monster license with Universal, I believe.
And some of our competitors with Walking Dead.
Right.
Or, you know, it's interesting to me because these are all things 5 and 8 years ago we looked at and we said, God, that just doesn't seem like something a player is going to respond well to. But now with the Q scores and the familiarity and likability of some of these licenses, they're actionable.
Well, you know, I actually signed a Bela Lugosi, which was Bela Lugosi's grandson. He's a lawyer for C3, which is a company in L.A. They had the Stooges and others. We tried the monster games, and it does have a good attraction. But you can attract them. The key is still, is it a good game? You know, if you can't integrate the theme, you know, like, let's be honest, and I love Joe Comico like my brother, but Gilligan's Island, that's not a typical, you know, what are you going to do, sink the boat? So, you know, or the Titanic is a tough one for Bally's right now. I mean, people forget the boat sinks. It's not a good story.
Well,
you know?
And also you'll see multiple examples of the same math model. One's called, you know, Red, White, and Blue. The other's called Gold, Silver, Bronze.
Sure.
One's widely successful. The other one isn't.
Isn't that weird?
So it's,
and
it's,
how many
it's,
people have copied Buffalo from Aristocrat?
And some of them have been copied and not been successful.
Some, almost all of them. I mean, Buffalo is unique. And then people think, in Thundering Herds, you put a buffalo in it and you got an instant audience. Not necessarily.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a balancing act again. I think that you're seeing a trend of more mature graphics. You're seeing a trend of, you know, I really don't like the term volatility, but where pays are weighted and the experience of really having the opportunity to win something meaningful, at the end of the day, you're gambling.
Yeah.
So you have to have a chance to win.
Absolutely. And a chance to win. We'll talk about that for just a second. Now, I've been harping, and all my guests have been quizzed on this. We're getting a real push from the operators to have tighter and tighter games, 85% games. When the town, in fact, one operator, you're probably too young to remember, made a fortune. It was called the Showboat. It was on, or not the Showboat, but the Holiday on the Strip. It was 97.6% slots.
Mm-hmm.
If they had neon everywhere. 97.6. They
dollar
made,
hot dogs.
It was. They, thank you. But it was the number one slot machine. Excuse me, earner in the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 90. And now everybody's saying, give me 85%. Give me 86%. How do you get a good game when you're taking 15 cents of every dollar from
it's a contentious discussion because we as suppliers want to have that lifetime value. We
yeah.
want to have loyalty
of your title
of our title
yeah.
and you know when you have a churn and burn mentality, which you know some customers do because they're held you know to 90-day obligations being
yeah.
public companies or what have you, the goal alignment sometimes diverges. So it's a challenge that you know we always have to continue to try and you know, find common ground with our customers on, but I'm a proponent of having a lifetime value, having a license that has product extensions and having
sure.
something where someone doesn't feel they got burned, and by way of that, they're not going to just shun that game from ever
sure.
trying it again.
Because you play the game, let's say on a Las Vegas Strip property, and you lose $100 in 8 seconds, and then that game shows up in Oklahoma, which, let's say, Oklahoma's looser.
Mm-hmm.
As a given market, it's looser than the Strip. Let's
well,
be honest.
I think
yeah.
the easiest delineation is destination markets and regional markets.
But everybody's regional now. Everybody.
Fair.
In fact, everybody's local. Even the people coming to the Strip, those people are playing elsewhere. In the old days, we were the only places, when I say we, Nevada was all you could play. Back when you were, you know, a kid, the only place you could play here. Now you can play anywhere but Utah and Alaska and Hawaii.
Right.
And by the way, they have casinos too. They're just behind the hut. But, you know, so people are familiar with everything. And then suddenly, you know, you come here and you just get, for lack of a better word, you get raped. You get raped as a player. And it just, I don't know how you guys design games and try to get them to stick because you're given, what, 30, 60, 90 days to make that game on the
yeah,
floor?
Yeah, I'd say 90 to 180.
They give you that long now?
Sometimes
okay.
the benchmark is, you know, a lot shorter than
it
that.
It is. Sometimes a game
you're dealing
comes
with financial instruments here.
That's right. And if it doesn't make so much money per square foot, adios.
Yeah, but it's also not just about acquisition. It's about retention. And
yeah.
that's what I've always struggled with is there's so much money being spent on the Strip, as we look at it right now, on player loyalty programs and retention and getting people to make incremental trips and recency, frequency, monetary value. But then it doesn't all translate into how they operate on their floor.
Absolutely.
From a pricing standpoint.
Right.
And I'll also say this, and many of my colleagues would agree, denomination is dead. So when you say, oh, it's a penny game,
yeah.
but I'm betting
$5.
Know,
bucks.
I'm betting 500
yeah.
of them
yeah.
or 250
yeah.
of them. It's a dollar game.
Yeah, at least. At
so
least.
Pricing is,
yeah.
is evolving.
Yeah, the candles on top mean nothing,
nothing.
Anymore. Remember the day of the blue candles and the red? Yeah, who cares?
Absolutely.
And by the way, you don't see penny games in the high limit, yet you're betting $5.
That's right.
I can go into the high limit side and bet a dollar and be in the high limit and yet bet $5 out in the cheap section. Get better service in here, better games. When I say better games, better pay tables.
Mm-hmm.
But the fun games are out on the regular floor. And here I am pointing, and we're on radio, and you know no one can see what I'm pointing at.
It's translating well for those of you listening.
But it is difficult, and it's difficult for your designers, and it's difficult for you as the executives to say, is this game any good? It doesn't get a chance.
Well,
so.
And that's before we even consider, you know, the number of lines offered on a game, the number of coins per line,
yeah.
you know, where it's positioned on
way
the floor,
games, yeah.
toppers and end caps, and all
yeah.
the various factors that really make this business art and science.
It is more of an art than science. And that's the hard part to people, because a mathematical model, you go, this is identical to the best game ever, and it doesn't work. So there's an art to it. It's like hitting. You know, Tony Gwynn, I bring this up because he actually coached at San Diego State. He couldn't teach people how to hit, but the guy could hit almost 400. How come he can't tell me how to do that?
No doubt.
Because he had talent, and it was an art, the art of hitting. And this is kind of the art of game development.
Well, and a lot of people got in the Hall of Fame for hitting 250 and 300, too. You don't have to
yeah.
just hit 400 or 500.
I know. Isn't that amazing? You get one hit out of four times at bat, and you're on the All-Star team?
First ballot, Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't know how that works unless you're putting them out of the park. But,
right.
you know, people forget Babe Ruth hit, I think, lifetime like 357. And yet he hit, you know, 600 home runs. So,
mm-hmm.
come on. You know, Tony Gwynn hit almost 400. But, you know, last guy to do it was Ted Williams, but who was also a San Diego product. But I'm not rubbing
God,
that into
shameless
you.
Plug.
You know, the UNLV, one day we'll be able to reference a Hall of Famer from UNLV. Maybe basketball, but, you know. But now, do you support the school? Do you go back and do anything?
When I can. I donate when I can. Obviously, would like to get more involved. I came back.
You could coach today.
I don't know about that. You know, I think that's a tough challenge to take on. But definitely when I moved back in early 2010, the goal was to get more involved in the community. Yeah. And some.
How'd you like going there? I mean, it's the school sometimes doesn't get – it's actually a good school. And I think people don't respect it.
It's a very transient-oriented school where people come in and then leave.
Yeah, commuter school.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that the academics and the capabilities of the professors, what have you, have continued to get better. The law school.
They actually have professors now?
Well, when I went there, they did. But, you know, it could be worse. We could be North Carolina.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Or Florida. How about Florida State, where everybody goes to prison and then graduates? It's a whole different thing. So, but do you go to games? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and not only at the college level, but I was just at the Finley Prep Gorman game this past weekend.
Really?
Which is like a gaming habitat for everyone.
Absolutely.
You know?
Isn't that where Snoop B's kid goes?
Yep,
yeah,
he goes to Gorman.
Yeah, in fact, he's on TV with that stuff. Mm-hmm. It is amazing. So you're excited about this new shot, and you see a lot of growth coming up. So where do you see the online business coming? Do you have the same views as your boss? You better. He's right here.
Well, I mean, and there was a group back at WMS that were really in the early part of how that all evolved.
What was that called? The
Jackpot Party Casino.
Yeah. So and they put
and
a lot
Lucky
of money.
Lucky Cruise and Goldfish. There's a lot of different executions, which I think are good examples of social casual content.
Well, but you did a lot of that with Lord of the Rings, too. You had to play online and then come back and play, open up bonuses. How did that work out?
That was called Player's Life. And
Player's
it was a
Life, thank
different
you.
Execution where you push to virtual and then push back to physical. And for whatever reason, you know, I think it was a little ahead of its time. But from a social standpoint,
well, you
look at...
Do you really want people knowing you're in a casino? I mean, if you went on to Player's Life, it said, hey, look, Rob just hit a jackpot, and you go, isn't he supposed to be at work?
If it's an avatar and you can't tie it back to me, possibly. But I think, you know, some research was just published in the last 2 weeks that shows the prevalence and growth of social casual.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's definitely an area of the business that we have to have some kind of strategy on. So as Ram alluded, we have some licensing deals out there. But now it's, okay, what's the next step?
Yeah. Well, one of the discussions we always have on this show is the millennials. You know, the millennials. I sit there and go, you know, eventually they're going to play. They don't have any money yet. They're not in the gaming mood. They're there for a different reason. I equate it to you can't sell baby food to people who don't have babies. So the millennials are still getting out of school. In fact, they're still in the house. They haven't got out yet. Yet we're all trying to invent games for them, and they don't have the time nor the dollars to play it. They will 20 years from now. I mean, I didn't start gaming until I had money, and I didn't have money until my alimony payment stopped. And thank God for that,
right?
Yeah, but until those stop, what cash do you have? You know, I could put down $20. Now I can put down 25. So, you know, it's a whole different world. But are you targeting these people? Like, when you come up with a game, do you say, I'm going after the 21-year-old from San Francisco, or do you
you can't get that surgical when you're trying to submit to multiple labs and, you kind of find yourself developing for the lowest common denominator. Now, the millennials is something we talk about quite a bit just in the last 2 months. I think within that context, you have to think about if you develop the best game, but it's in a perceived to be old cabinet or an old platform, millennials are going to walk by it. So there's going to have to be...
You think they're more attracted by the technology?
I think you're going to have platform innovation, and by way of that accessibility, in addition to unique content experiences, which could be perceived skill-based oriented or things along those lines. So it's going to be a bear to tackle. But
yeah, but everybody still plays Buffalo.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand what you're saying, but yet people still gravitate. It's like Gone with the Wind, still the number one movie of all time when you do inflation adjustment.
But the boomers and matures are evolving at a pace, and we're not getting the reentry of a younger demographic to sustain all these wonderful mega-billion-dollar resorts right here.
Yeah, but the baby boomers, which I'm pointing to myself, is, you know, we're retiring. There's more retirees than ever.
Right.
There's more old people than ever. You know, in fact, more that's where the cash is. There's more accumulation of wealth than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it's a tough battle, and I understand because way back when I was in the packaged food business, and the only people that ate my packaged food I was selling canned salmon were old people. That's because nobody young likes the stuff. You know, I wouldn't eat salmon when I was a kid, you know, because it looked gross. You know, and then you acquire a taste because your doctor says you eat that or die. Right. So, you know, things
thus
like
spam came about.
That's right. Oh, well, spam's a whole different thing. But the same thing with, like, geritol, you know, as kids, you don't worry about it. But now you say, hey, I need this stuff. So, you know, your life changes. And I think that's also true in gaming. But it's a tough dilemma for you guys developing the games because you have to worry about what's next. And you've got operators saying, give me something for the young people.
Well, and the challenge is just the shift from gaming revenue to non-gaming revenue. It's clear that, I said earlier, it's always going to be about gambling and an opportunity to win.
Yeah.
But they want to be at the clubs, and they want to be at the day pool, and they want to have, you know, status and affinity,
yeah,
and they want to be perceived to be the big guy on that night of the week. So
yeah,
there's some ways to, I think, capitalize on non-monetary incentives.
Sure.
You know, just various things that are being done online via,
yeah,
Facebook or what have you.
And plus it's $500 to take two people to a show nowadays where, you know, when you and I went to shows, it was, you know, $25 a ticket. Now it's $250 a ticket, or Jimmy Buffett was like $500 a ticket. For $1,000, you know what, we're going to listen to the album. You know, I love Jimmy Buffett, but the album's really good for $9.
No
so,
doubt.
So
no doubt.
It's a tough thing. So, well, I congratulate both of you. Believe it or not, we're running out of time here. So, your website, where can people play your games, learn about them? What do you got?
Yeah, so we're going to most likely go through a rebranding process. So as a part of the acquisition.
Are you going to be called Multimedia or GCA?
What's TBD. So we're going to go through. We're going to go through.
Where did that name come from?
We're not going to be called TBD, but we're going to go through a branding audit, and we're going to look at different avenues of what's best for the brand.
Because right now you're saying it's GCA.
GCAINC.com,
okay,
for the payment side, and Multimedia Games for the game side.
But they linked, I think.
Yeah, we just hyperlinked them,
okay,
so you can navigate back and forth. But between a good part of this year is going to be spent on. Well, one aspect will be spent on the brand, what we want it to stand for. Will it be a branded house, a house of brands? You know, so
you haven't decided that as a company.
I think we want to be mindful of not making a rash.
And then when
decision.
You buy, and you're going to buy Scientific Games, so you're waiting until you get them all together. This is what
you're thinking. That's up to the guy on my left. But I do think that, you know, within the space, as crowded as it is, and the signal to noise ratio, I think it's a great opportunity for us to reinstitute, reinvigorate a brand that pulls the two groups together,
yeah,
and get some awareness.
Okay, now, there's a guy here who wants to know, how does he get in the tournament? Where does he find out where the next tournament is?
That's a great question. I think we have the information on multimediagames.com. Again, we're in the early innings of getting a lot of the entries set up, so I have to imagine that more and more marketing promotions, if not through the casino themselves, will be marketed through our site. But again, we're targeting 150 locations. I got to think that the gentleman or the young lady, you know, can find.
Check with your own casino, basically?
Exactly. Well,
okay.
I mean, in addition to checking the site. So
okay.
I'll take that as a walk. I'm sure it's there and Linda has it. I don't know specifically.
Okay. So now, this is me asking, can a person win more than once? Like, could I win at Lake Charles and also win at St. Louis?
Each respective casino sends one person.
One person, okay.
Yeah. Or they can send multiple, but they can buy multiple entries per casino.
That's up to them. Okay.
So theoretically, you know, you can't really send the same person from two
Be tough.
Hosted casinos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, and then I can't enter on my own. Like, I can't just say, I'll buy my way in for whatever it is.
No.
You can't do. You have to go through this system.
Correct.
And there's no random drawing. It's up to the casino. They could just say, I'm sponsoring you. Or they can say you got to win a tournament, or they could whatever, right?
And again, we have a prepackaged promotion this goes through, but there is some flex in terms of which casinos or how the casinos want to have that person, you know, represent,
okay,
them.
So you're excited about this year's, and you think it's going to be $1 million, or is it $1 million?
It is $1 million.
That's dedicated.
So
it's $1 million.
$1.3 million in total cash prizes.
But $1 million to the winner.
$1 million to the winner.
Cash, no annuity crap, just cash.
Well, you have the various options that you can select from. But I'll tell you, it's the most meaningful slot tournament award for a first place winner that I've seen.
Mr. Hilton
time.
Gave away $1 million way, way back when. It was called the Rainbow Jackpot, and that was, 1987. But
wow.
That's when $1 million was really a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's been a long time since, of course, Mega Bucks gives out the millions, but it's always an annuity. So you're going to get, bam, right there on the spot, $1 million.
Come a winner, leave a legend. That's,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not bad. You do that yourself?
No, that's actually, that already existed, and I've really come around on it. I
wow.
like it a lot.
Okay,
I mean,
so someone else gets credit for that. All right,
yeah.
I like that. But that's good. That was a good tagline. I think that's fantastic. So believe it or not, it's been an hour, and I've got to plug my next show, and I don't know who my guest is next week, but we'll find out who it is. I thank everyone for listening, and thank my guests, and don't forget you get a Bundt cake. And I do have to plug Bobby Slayton because he's usually on, and he couldn't make it today. Bobby will be at the South Point casino this weekend with Jackie the Joke Man Martin over there with Stuttering John at South Point. So I'll be there Saturday. I hope some other people join us. And again, thank you for both for showing up. And
thank
don't
you
forget,
for the time.
You get a phenomenal bundt cake from Nothing Bundt Cake. So
thank you.
This is Brooke Dunn with Casino Talk, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to CEM Audio Edge Live Talk Radio. Until next time, listen to episodes on demand at CEMAudioEdge.com.